So I'm not going to tell you about an experiment that that we have already performed, because it's we are just starting and considering the idea of doing this experiment with Marcus. And so I'm going to tell you more about the plan of the experiment and also about the tools we can use using superconducting circuits to address the question of measuring this third order interference term. So first let's discuss the mapping we can do between the three slit thought experiment and a general description of this experiment, which is more related to the actual equality we are interested in. So this cartoon will become clearer at the end of the talk when you will understand what these symbols mean. But this is in a sense a superconducting circuit. So the first step in the experiment is to prepare the system in a non-classical statistical mixture of states S0, S1, S2. So we consider three states, S0, S1, S2, and then we can prepare this mixture. So in the slit experiment, this corresponds to having a single particle impinging on the slits with a zero-point fluctuation for the position, which is larger than the slit spacing, so that it can enter into every slit. The second step is a filtering. So this corresponds to going through the slits, and we're going to describe it with a projective detector. So it will be a projective transformation where so it's called DJ, where J is a subset of the states 0, 1, and 2. And we are going to use a slightly different definition than the one Matthew just proposed, but. So this here we suggest that for all state in the subset J, the detector DJ will click, and for all states in this ensemble minus J, it will not click. So of course it's interesting to describe experimentally with what precision epsilon this will be valid. And what we are going to assume more is that there will be an identical statistics of outcome for a following measurement if DJ is used once or twice. So this is the projectiveness. So and the correspondingly in the thought experiment. So DJ clicking means J is an open slit. Not clicking means it's a closed slit. And this assumption of the projective measurement is not necessarily true for the actual slits, but we need it here because, in particular, the back action of the measurement is needed because we don't want to destroy the state after this filtering. The final step is another measurement. So we're going to measure the system again with an apparatus, and this new detector will differ from any possible DJ. So that at least we will get a second order interference, non-trivial second order interference. And this is corresponding to the fact that you get the detector in the thought experiment. The position of the detector is located at a point where there is already second order interference. So now with all these definitions, we are going to define the probability PJ that we get. So it's a joint probability that the detector DJ clicks and that we find a given outcome for the final measurement little m. So for instance, m equal plus 1. And then we now return to the usual definitions. So I3 will be this sum and difference of these pi j's. And we introduce in case we need to normalize. So if this quantity is not dimensionless, which will be the case in our experiment, but in optics, for instance, it's an intensity. So we need to normalize this quantity with this quantity delta, which is the sum of the absolute values of the second order interference terms. And so this kappa, which was introduced yesterday, is the ratio between I3 and delta. All right. So what could be so the reason why we are interested in reproducing these experiments with superconducting circuits is So there are several reasons why this could be interesting. So first of all, we are going to use a single system manipulation and measurement, so that DJ is actually a projective transformation, and so we work effectively with probabilities of events, exactly like in a general probabilistic theory. So this is a direct mapping of theories we could think of to an experiment. So this should avoid many parasitic effects in the modeling of actual slits in physical space, the ones that were mentioned in the previous talk. So, for instance, the nonlinearity of the detector, or the electromagnetism corrections that you mentioned in your experiment. The second difference is that in the case of superconducting circuits, we will be able to have three states which are degenerate in space, so they will share the same spatial mode, so that we should avoid any possible suppression of the interference in case relativistic structure of space-time could suppress them, as hinted by the work of presented by Marcus. So this is to be added to another degeneracy we can enforce. So we can enforce phase degeneracy or energy degeneracy. So I will talk now today about just the phase degeneracy. So finally, it's a very robust and controllable system. So we can prepare any input state and consider any final measurement. And the precision that we predict with state-of-the-art devices is comparable to that of single photons or spin liquids, which is in the 10 to the minus 3 range for kappa. All right, so there are two possible ways we will consider. So one is a Q-treat in a cavity. And the other one is considers a cavity itself and uses photo counting of inside of this cavity. So maybe before I tell you exactly how are these circuits, so let me overview a bit the field of circuit QED so that we understand the tools. So we're going to consider objects which are modes of the electromagnetic spectrum at around a few gigahertz. So this is similar to the cell phone frequencies, and this is exactly the same frequencies as you use in your experiment. So here I show the electromagnetic spectrum. So you see that a photon in the microwave domain is about 5 orders of magnitude smaller in energy than a photon in the visible optics domain. So that in the visible optics, if you now convert frequency for temperature, you see that at room temperature, a visible photon will be much more energetic than KT, so that there are no photons at room temperature, and you can do single photon experiments quite robustly. In the microwave domain, this is not the case, so there will be thousands of photons in a mode if we work at room temperature, and that's why we use a refrigerator, and so I found this advertising for for a Philips fridge. This was in the 50s, you see. And so we use indeed a combination of a microwave and a refrigeration, and so this is called in our case a dilution refrigerator, and it cools down the field at 20 millikelvin, something like that. Looks like this, and at these temperatures we can prepare the vacuum of excitation and therefore also a single photons. So the objects that will host these electromagnetic modes are microwave resonators. So this could be two-dimensional objects such as these microstrip resonators, or three-dimensional objects such as this cavity in aluminum. These are made in superconductors, so we can reach quite easily quality factors of 1 million. And a simple model for the first mode of resonance of these structures is an LC oscillator, which we can quantify, quantize. So the charge of the capacitor plays the role of the momentum, and the phase plays the role of the position. And similarly to a mechanical oscillator, where position and momentum are conjugate, so phase and charge are conjugate, so that we can quantize this mode by introducing the resonance frequency and the impedance of the resonator, and we find these annihilation operators, which are defined like that. And in the end, these oscillators are then harmonic oscillators, which are quantized with the resonance frequency omega naught. The tools we use at room temperature to manipulate these microwaves are these microwave components. So this is a circulator. It allows you to enter a wave here, which goes here but not here, and if it enters here, it goes here but not here, etc. There are mixers, directional couplers, amplifiers, and the tools at room temperature are also made of microwave sources, which are like lasers, but orders of magnitude more stable than lasers in optics, and microwave detectors, which are also extremely efficient. So we benefit from the radar industry mostly to have extremely efficient equipment like this. One thing we can do if we hook up a cavity, like we mentioned, and to a pin which dips inside of the cavity, and we excite this pin using an apparatus like this. Then what it will do is so we can describe the coupling essentially as the Hamiltonian of the oscillator plus this term, which is epsilon di dagger plus Hermitian conjugate, and this if you look at the evolution of this evolution is the displacement operator, and the kind of states we can prepare, whatever you can do on this pulse here, the only class of states you will prepare are coherent states, which are here decomposed as superpositions of photon number states. So in order to prepare different states, so for instance a Fock state, we need a nonlinearity in the system, and this nonlinearity in our case is performed using a dissipationless nonlinear inductor, which is the Josephson junction, so a junction between two superconducting electrodes, so here aluminum oxide, aluminum. What it does is that instead of having the LC oscillator as before, we add in parallel this nonlinear inductor, which instead of having a flux squared over 2L term in the Hamiltonian, like this inductive term, adds a cosine of phi. And essentially, instead of having a parabola for the potential energy as function of the flux, we now have this kind of cosine shape. And the levels are not evenly spaced anymore. They are, you see, they go closer and closer as you climb up the ladder. So that now, by sending a wave at omega naught and exactly omega naught, you stay in the Hilbert space made of only these two first Fock states. So we can now selectively address the Fock states by having induced this nonlinearity. So the state of the art now is that these superconducting qubits are as coherent as a hydrogen atom. This is taken from an overview of 2013 by Dover and Shulkoff, and you see here they plot the evolution of the qubit lifetime as a function of the year. So it was the first qubit was in 99 by Yasu Nakamura, and as you can see, it's a steady increase. It's faster than Moore's law, and so we can hope that it will make progress steadily. The kind of states that can be prepared using these circuits are Fock states. So here I show Wigner functions of these states, right? So we can prepare Fock states, arbitrary superposition of Fock states, single mode squeezing, two mode squeezing, or Schrödinger-Katz states, which are superpositions of coherent states. So let's discuss now the detector, right? So how to detect the state of a qubit. So a qubit, this is really relevant for the subject of the talk, because we need now to describe how we will perform the DJ projective measurement. So this is how we are going to do it. So the qubit will be made of the first two levels of this anharmonic oscillator. So we consider the qubit to be this state. And the qubit, which is made of the junction, is coupled to a mode of the cavity, which is here described in purple, at frequency omega c. When they are not resonant in the so-called dispersive regime, to a very good approximation, the coupling between these two objects is simply given by this term, which is chi times the number of photons in the cavity times the number of excitations in the qubit. And using this this coupling, we can actually measure the state of the qubit. The reason is that this coupling term will change effectively the frequency of the cavity depending on the qubit state. So if the qubit is in the ground state, the resonance frequency of the cavity will be omega c plus this frequency chi over 2. And in the case the qubit is excited, the frequency of the cavity will be omega c minus chi over 2. And so now if we send a wave at the cavity frequency omega c, we will see two possible outcomes, two possible phases in the field coming out, which will correspond, which will indicate a qubit either in the ground or excited state. So this is shown here. So here we show it in the Fresnel phase space. So we look in the Fresnel space phase is simply looking at the two quadratures of the amplitude of the field coming out. So it's if you wish, it's a plus a dagger and a minus a dagger. And if we send a coherent pulse, a coherent tone at the input, it looks just like this in if we plot the Wigner function of this state. So it will be just centered at a given complex number alpha, which will be the complex amplitude of the field, and there will be some variance which correspond to a zero point fluctuation. And at the output, because of these two possible frequencies depending on qubit state, we will have two possible uncertainty disks, so two possible values of alpha plus or minus zero point fluctuations corresponding to ground or excited states. So in order to avoid polluting this measurement with too much extra noise, we fabricate a non-degenerate quantum limited amplifier, which is able to add only the quantum limit of noise plus some error to this measurement. So if so this is an example. So here we made a qubit, prepared it in state E plus G. Superposition of states, and we measure this. So we send a wave at the cavity frequency and measure the in the quadrature phase space the histogram of the two quadratures we get. So this is an experiment. It's there is a 1 million experiments here, and so this one is taken using only. It's an amplifier made by the radio astronomers at Caltech, which is already excellent. But here you see a single bump. So that you cannot differentiate here the two states E and G of the qubit. Now, if we use our Jetson amplifier before using the Caltech amplifier, you see that we are able now to discriminate two peaks quite clearly. So that, if you wish, the detector DJ would be, in a sense, to say that if the imaginary part of A is positive, then we get a click. If it's negative, there is no click. So as you can see, there is a tiny overlap here, but this can be improved precisely. So this is something we have to work on to improve the fidelity of the readout. So with this kind of circuit, we can, for instance, measure. So let's say we measure the imaginary part of A as a function of time. So again, imaginary part of A positive means a click. And we start with the state of the qubit in the excited state. So here at time zero, we are in this orange configuration, so meaning positive imaginary of A. And at each time step, we measure strongly the qubit state. Okay, and so as you can see here, it stays in the excited state for some time. And at after a given time, so here 30 nanoseconds, but this is arbitrary, it jumps down to the ground state and here never comes back up. So what you see here is a quantum jump. Yeah.
Sorry, is this the measurement record or is this
yes.
the?
Okay. This is the measurement record, and but each point here is taken at on a finite time frame, and we do so that each point is a projective measurement of the qubit. So what I'm going to show you is a movie where we repeat this experiment many times, and you will see the kind of the variance in the traces we get. So as you can see, it's the first jump down is a random event. Sometimes you can see jumps back up, which correspond to the finite temperature of the qubit state. And if we now draw the histogram of the first time the qubit jumps down, it corresponds to this curve. So here is the number of events, and we plot as a function of time the jump time. And as you can see, so it's a nice exponential law, meaning that so this is the qubit relaxation from the excited state. So it's not the subject of the talk to continue with this, but I just to mention what we can do with this kind of objects. So for instance, we have measured the quantum trajectories of a qubit in real time. We have looked also at post-selection in quantum mechanics with the formalism of the effect matrix. We have recently performed quantum feedback, so stabilizing an arbitrary state of the Bloch sphere using measurement and active feedback. And we also have performed parameter estimation using these measurements. But coming back to the subject of the talk, so let's consider the first way to perform this third order interference measurement, so which would be with a Q trait in a cavity. So this time, instead of considering that this anharmonic oscillator is just made of two states, we will go one step further and consider now the first three states of the anharmonic oscillator. So in this case, we can replace this coupling term by instead of using a sigma z operator here, we use the B annihilation operator of this anharmonic oscillator, and there is a correction due to this anharmonicity precisely. So the first order correction is this term. So in case so this is mixed up, but so in case the qubit is in the ground state, the cavity will have its resonance frequency at omega c. If it's in the state one, cavity will have its resonance frequency shifted by minus chi. If it's in state two, shifted by minus two chi. So the idea is to probe the cavity this time at omega c minus chi, where because of these various resonance frequency, we should see in the quadrature phase space not two but three blobs this time. So this is something we've done here. So what I show you is this a histogram of measurements corresponding to so again imaginary and real part of the field coming out of the cavity, and you can see three blobs which are in this experiment not perfectly distinguishable, right? So it's this is far from a projective measurement there. But still, we can so by doing Rabi oscillations between 0, 1, 1, 2, and 2, 0, we can perfectly pinpoint the exact location of the three values corresponding to 0, 1, and 2 qubit state. So with armed with this readout, we can, for instance, so I can show that we can prepare an arbitrary state of the Q-trait. So here is an experiment. So this is an experimental tomography of the Q-trait. So we prepared here the state 0 plus 1 plus 2. And here what you see is, in a sense, a graphical representation of the density matrix. So each column amplitude is the magnitude of the density matrix element, and the color encodes the phase of that element. All right. So here for 0 plus 1 plus 2, it's phase 0 for everybody. So this state we can prepare, for instance, by doing a rotation of the qubit a rotation between state 0, 1. Around y by this angle, followed by a rotation of the between the states 1 and 2 around y of this angle pi over 2. So operationally, it's very simple. We just send two pulses at frequency omega 0, 1 and omega 1, 2. And then what we do to produce this this measurement is do a tomography. So we perform these six unitary operations on the qubit. And then use the measurement I was mentioning here to measure the probability to be in 0, 1, or 2 after these unitary operations. And then using linear combinations, we can directly infer this tomography reconstruction. Okay, so we can vary the preparation. So here is an example of states that we were able to prepare. So for the first step in the process, it's pretty. So I would say that this Q-treat way of doing the experiment is validated. So so working on precision, we could get a very good fidelities, and so we could indeed prepare any state, non-classical state mix, non-classical statistical mixture of the three states at the beginning of the experiment. The step two is unfortunately more delicate. So doing the filtering, so by the slits with DJs. So you see, so it's indeed we show with this graph that if we were to improve the discrimination between the three states, which is doable. We could easily get these D0, D1, and D2 projectors. So essentially, the D0 projector would be if you say that if the quadratures hit this part of the screen, then this is a click for D0. If D1 would be this part of the screen and D2 this part of the screen. So this is okay. The problem is that in order to get a projector on the subspace generated by 0 and 1, for a click in D0, 1, we need that the essentially we need that at least two of these dots are at the same location. So this is possible by adjusting the pulse at the input, but it's clearly prone to errors because it will depend very finely of how we do the pulse at the input. So there may be a parasitic correction. So this does not seem very promising. And finally, the measurement of in an arbitrary POVM is easy. It's again using a unitary operation followed by the detector D0. So this is effectively an effect operator which corresponds to none of the other DJs. Okay, so how do we overcome this? So there is this second way of doing the experiment using photocounting. So in this way, so I'll just explain you how we can count the number of photons in a cavity, because this will be our new detector. So let's go back to the case we were mentioning before. So we have a qubit coupled to a harmonic oscillator. Remember this coupling, the dispersive coupling, so A dagger EE. So if we do some rewriting of the Hamiltonian, you see that the qubit frequency gets shifted by chi times A dagger A. So essentially, the qubit frequency now indicates the photon number, because the its value is it depends on the number of photons that they generate. The cavity frequency still indicates the qubit excitation, right? If you do the rewriting in the other sense, you see, as we mentioned before, that the cavity frequency depends on qubit state. So if we, so this is something we have already seen. So cavity frequency depends on qubit state. So now let's look at the at how the qubit frequency indicates the photon number. So we place ourselves here in the limit where chi, so this shift of the qubit frequency with one more photon in the cavity, is much larger than the line width of these of the qubit. So the qubit lifetime is much longer than chi minus one. And what we do in this experiment is we send a probe at the frequency f, which we vary close to the qubit frequency. And at the same time, we send a tone in the cavity that populates the cavity with a coherent state, with an amplitude epsilon c. So starting with a zero photon in the cavity, you see that if you do a measurement of the qubit is always in the ground state, except when the probe at f excites its transition frequency at fq. So now you see a little peak corresponding to the fact that the qubit can get excited, when there are zero photon in the cavity. As the amplitude of the field inside of the cavity increases, as there are more and more photons in the cavity, you see that you see more and more peaks appearing in the qubit, which all indicate one particular value for the number of photons in the cavity. So this line here corresponds to zero photon in the cavity. This line corresponds to one photon in the cavity, two, three, four, five photons in the cavity. So we can see already that the qubit will be a good photo counter here. But the way to do it sequentially is the following. So so essentially the photo counting consists in sending a pi pulse at the qubit frequency minus chi n. So this pi pulse will work only, will revert the populations of the qubit only if there are n photons in the cavity. So this is essentially what we will do for photo counting, because then we can use another cavity or the same cavity to detect the state of the qubit. And being in E means that there were n photons in the cavity. We can show a procedure where we so we can calibrate this photo counting experiment by sending a coherent pulse there, so with the Poisson statistics in the cavity. So we first send the coherent pulse, and here I represent the two possible states of the cavity depending on the qubit state, right? So it's more a superposition. So qubit in the ground state or qubit in the excited state. And here the cavity always starts in the ground state. So the first step is to displace the cavity. So we will populate the cavity, which works if the cavity is empty here, with a coherent state, with a Poisson distribution. And then the next step is to realize this conditional pi pulse. So essentially here, if we will select a given number of photons n, and perform a pi pulse between the two. So essentially, we bring this probability of occupation here to the ladder corresponding to the excited qubit. And finally, we detect the qubit excitation, and so can infer the number of the probability that this state is occupied. So here is what we get. So by sending here as a function of the amplitude of this coherent state in the cavity, we represent here the probabilities to detect 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 photons in the cavity. So the dots are experiment, and the lines are the theory, right? So theory meaning just a Poisson distribution. Okay. So how can we use this? So one application we did recently of this measurement is is doing a quantum Zeno dynamics of light. So the idea is to repeatedly ask the cavity if there are a given number of photons. So let's say we ask if there are three photons repeatedly. This means that we probe the qubit at fq minus 3 chi. So essentially, we will have two scenarios. One where the cavity says yes, the qubit says yes, the cavity has three photons, and the cavity will be fixed by Zeno effect in this third level. Or the other scenario is that the cavity, the qubit says no, there are no three photons, in which case the new Hilbert space in which we work with is this one, it's the same as before, minus the Fock state 3. And so what can be done then is by continuously doing this measurement, we can at the same time drive with a classical tone, this harmonic oscillator. And instead of developing a coherent state, we will see oscillation in this Hilbert subspace. So this is what we have measured. So here it's here we measure the evolution of the probability of occupation of Fock state 0, 1, 2, and 3 as a function of time as we drive the system with a classical tone. So it should be a Poisson distribution, but it's not at all, because you see that, for instance, the probability P3 stays at 0 all the time. We have blocked the access to the third level. And in fact, what you can see here is a kind of Rabi oscillation of a Q-trait, which is made of the first three levels of the cavity. So we can also show the evolution of the Wigner function in time. This is experiment and here theory. Starting from the vacuum. So the vacuum is again a Gaussian centered in zero in this representation. So if it was a coherent displacement, this Gaussian should simply move towards the right without being deformed. But here we represent a circle of blockade, the circle of Zeno blockade, where this linear function essentially gets crushed on this blockade circle, and then essentially rotates around the circle to go back to the original position. So in a cyclic manner, if everything was perfect, we would go back to the vacuum state. And in between, we prepare a kind of Schrödinger-Katz state of light. So here are various Schrödinger-Katz states we prepared by this technique by blocking at n equal 2, 3, 4, or 5. Okay, so how do we use this photocounting measurement to test third-order interference? So now I'd like to explain this cartoon. So here what we have is a series of three cavities with qubits. So qubits are represented as these crosses, and the cavities are represented as these ring-shaped objects. And the ring shape is inspired by a work by the Yale group, so Rigor et al. It's seen from the top. You see it's a kind of a coaxial cable where you have cut the inner conductor to a lambda over 4 wavelength. And so this object resonates. It's again a cavity. It's again a harmonic oscillator. But it turns out that you can reach a very high quality factor. So with this object, they reach 10 to the 7 quality factors. And it's pretty easy to couple qubits to it by drilling tunnels inside of this structure and bringing here a qubit close to the inner pole. So this representation is just that, so cavities, qubits, and qubits coupled to two cavities here. So the system will be, in this case, the system, the Q-trait we are going to investigate, will be the first three Fock states of this cavity. So the first step is the preparation. To prepare a state here, we will need to do, for instance, a snap gate, which can prepare an arbitrary state between 0, 1, and 2. The second step, the filtering part. This time, you will see it's much more robust. I take here the example of doing the projector on 0, 1. So for the projector on 0-1, what we can do, following what we discussed earlier, is sending two pi pulses at the same time at the frequencies fq and fq minus chi. So these two pi pulses will go for the qubit, which is here, from the ground to the excited state, only if the cavity has a state in the subspace spanned by 0 and 1. And this is what we can detect with the following pulse on this cavity here. So if we send a pulse at this cavity frequency, we can detect the outcome we will see at the in the classical world will be two histogram where we have two discriminate peaks, one corresponding to the qubit excited, and so the projector has been clicked, or one corresponding to the qubit in the ground state, which corresponds to the projector having not clicked. So this is how we plan to implement this this projector. And finally, so the final measurement corresponds as in the Q-treat before to in a unitary operation on the Q-treat, followed by again a measurement, but this time only of the state of the projector D0. And here, so a click of D0 would mean here again a positive voltage at the output. So again, to remind what we plan to measure, so we will, with this protocol, we will have access to the joint probability that DJ has clicked and that the final measurement has clicked. And this is what we will call PJ. And I3 will again be the sum of the PJs. All right, so I cannot show you data, of course. It's, this is not done. Well, what I can show you is an estimation of the precision we can get with this kind of object. So one big source of error will be the gate error for the preparation and measurement. So the these gates will have a finite fidelity and lead to errors in. So in the preparation, it's quite okay, I would say, because we don't know if we need a pure state or not to see a third order interference, but I guess it's fine if we don't. However, it may be very important to be extremely fiddle in this gate for the filtering for the slits here. So, and this is related to what Matthew said about this epsilon factor, I guess. So an error here on this gate will directly relate to an error on the projectiveness, let's say, of the DJ transformation. So state of the art for this gate errors are 10^-3, and if you do a simulation to determine what is the precision on kappa resulting from this error, you get 10^-4. So this is not too bad. If we reach state of the art, of course. Then another parasitic effect may come from the leak of the system to higher excited states. So this is not an actual Q-treat, it's an harmonic oscillator. But in fact, this is okay, because the higher excited state will have contributions in the PJs, will simply cancel out, since the DJs will not click if we're in a higher excited state. So that means that essentially they will, if you wish, it's similar to the P empty ensemble contribution in your experiment. So this cancels out in the sum rule. One more puzzling thing to me is the entanglement between the system and other systems. So you saw that this is this cavity is actually coupled to several systems, and it may well be that these three states we're interested in are actually entangled to other modes because of the gates, and this may or not correspond to a finite value of the third order interference term due to something which is predicted by quantum mechanics, but this I don't know. And so finally, the main source of error is the readout fidelity, or more precisely, the decoherence of the system during readout. Essentially, the discrimination between the peaks can be brought down to 10 to the minus 5 easily. So this is not an issue. But the issue is that during the measurement, the qubit that allows to detect the number of photons can go from excited to ground. And this will have events which are in between the peaks, right? And so because of that, we are right now the readout is limited to 10 to the limit of 10 to the minus 3 on kappa. So this could be alleviated by, for instance, saying that a click only occurs if you're in the ground state or in the excited state. I mean, so that we are not polluted by non-click events. Because you see, the relaxation is asymmetric, right? It relaxes towards the ground state, but never up at low enough temperatures. So, so all in all, I think 10 to the minus 3 is within reach. So with the repetition rate of this kind of systems, it corresponds to 2 hours of measurement. And 10 to the minus 4 corresponds to less than a week of measurement. So we hope it's doable. All right, so it's time to... Oh yeah. So. This is just a summary of what I've already said. I'd like to thank my collaborators, so Marcus for introducing me to this very interesting question, and the experiments I've shown you on the culture tweet have been done by Sébastien Gézouin, a postdoc in our group, and Quentin Fischer, who's a PhD student in the group. Okay, so thanks for your attention.
What sort of efficiency do you expect in the number resolving detector?
So precisely, this is the 10 to the minus 3 is the precision. This is the precision of the number resolving detector right now. Not the one I showed you, but the state of the art.
So by that, do you mean that if I had the second Fock state in the cavity populated, then one in every 1,000 trials I'd be wrong?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right now that's it. And the reason is that the counter, which is a qubit, which gives you the binary answer that you are or not in the second state, during the measurement of that qubit, the qubit may relax. And this is what limits this number to 10 to the minus 3 right now. So if we go to a longer coherence time for the qubit, it will get better. But there are also tricks to focus on clicks corresponding to a state of the qubit which is stable, like G. So we can think of improving this figure for the purpose of measuring kappa, I guess.
I think I missed something. So I understood the role of the slits is this D or this projector.
Yeah.
But what was the role of the, what played the role of the final detector?
Oh, yes. So in this case, the role of the final detector is this measurement. So it's a second application of the DJs. Except that if we just apply another DJ, it won't be interesting because the interference, even at second order, will vanish. So what we do instead is we first do a unitary operation on the system so that if it was in zero, it's prepared now in a state which is a sphere position, a non-classical mixture of the three states, and then we measure d zero. So we check if the system is in zero. So that effectively this whole box here corresponds to an effect operator, which measures which clicks when the system is in a non-classical mixture. But this could be done with so for the final measurement we are not restricted to projective operations. So it could be any POVM. So actually, this is an example, but we could also measure fluorescence of the qubit and get directly on something which differs from the DJs. I think there are many choices if we just want any POVM. But if we want any projector any projective operation on this Q-treat, this is a procedure we can use.
So I mean, one could walk into Urbashi's field and see three blocks, and this is not dependent on assuming that quantum theory describes the field. Would you agree that? Oh, well, I guess the question is. Is it necessary for me to accept certain aspects of quantum theory in order to convince myself that your experiment is something like slits, or is it not dependent?
I think it's more or less a black box, right? So operationally, we will since we define these detector DJs. It's really connected to what Matthew mentioned, right? We can indeed have operationally detectors which click always when some preparation is performed. We don't have to discuss if quantum mechanics is assumed for that, and never clicks if other preparations are performed. So we have this ensemble of preparations, an ensemble of effect operators, if you wish, or measurements, which will click to within an error of epsilon, here 10 to the minus 3, hopefully. So this ensemble is really connected more to the GPT than to quantum theory, I would say.
Nice. So it helps to know quantum theory in order to put it together, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So when you do these eight, so you want to measure eight states of the Q-treat, right? That's what you're saying. So you have these.
Yes, the DJs, yes.
So how long will it take to do one such combination of eight?
Yes, so it depends on how you do the experiment. One of the eight will take 1 microsecond.
Sure.
The eight is 8 microseconds. And then we repeat.
Right.
So if you want enough statistics, then that's 2 hours for 10 minus 3.
What's the decoherence time of your...
Of the qubit?
Yeah.
So right now, state of the art is 0.1 millisecond.
So that's more than a microsecond.
Much more.
Yeah, of course. So 8 microseconds is within that. So you're not going to basically get into some problem with that changing.
Yes, so decoherence of the system, this is still in this prediction, right? Maybe the experiment will define something else. But within this prediction, this expectation, indeed the decoherence of the qubit is the main source of error on kappa right now. But you see, it's still pretty good. It's 10 to the minus 3 with current numbers. So I guess if the pace of getting better at making qubits continue, it will get better just by waiting and let others do this tedious work of improving T1 and T2.
So this problem that you mentioned here, that you can have entanglement of other modes, that's most important probably in the projective DJs, right?
Where yes, I guess, indeed. Yeah.
And the other parts, it doesn't seem to be like in the preparation, you just prepare a mixed state.
Yes, so you don't care. Yeah, except that, it's more subtle than that, I guess, because these other modes are then used to perform the measurements later.
Oh, that's right.
So if there is entanglement in the preparation, mm-hmm. you may see effects which are very reminiscent of this, where you actually use a measurement which adds some information to the system and all those. So there could be errors due to this. Especially that. If we really do this experiment with this kind of pulse sequence. The unitary and the Q-treat is a bit subtle. It uses another qubit here, T, which is here represented by so this is this guy. So the gate actually uses a unitary operation on both systems, which in the end of the operation gets this one back to the ground state. So it should be separable. but there might be a failure. So within epsilon, you have again maybe an entanglement. And,
All right. So yeah, let's thank Benjamin again.